back to another edition of our Retro Review podcast series here on the Barber Share Network. I'm Chris, joined alongside by Rob and Chris Osborne here as we are talking about two pay-per-views from World Championship Wrestling today, two of which are uncensored, one from 1995 and the other from 1998. These were two, I guess the word would be interesting shows, I guess. But, you know, we felt that these were the ones to do for the month of March. We have another one coming. We will talk about that later. But yeah, I mean, Rob, Chris, good to be reconvening here after our No Way Outs last time around.
Yeah, it feels like it's kind of been a while because we did that like early February, and now here we are knocking these out finally. So yeah, Chris, good to have you back.
Yeah, thanks. Always good to do these.
There's not really too much current stuff to talk about at the moment that we're, you know, not going to cover. Nothing's happened today, really, is the barometer for current stuff on these shows. So, I mean, really, we could just kind of dive right in.
Yeah, you might as well.
Yeah. So we'll go starting with Uncensored 1995, and we have some notes from the Observer here. WCW is very interested in bringing in Paul White as some sort of gimmick role, but exactly what hasn't been decided. Obviously they will. And I don't know, he was definitely at one of the pay-per-views in 1995. Was he already there? And he had like an appearance and then they brought him in after, I believe.
Well, I think I know he was like, they brought him in because they put him in the front row to do the whole, like, you know, Hogan sees him.
He first appeared at Slamboree.
Okay. Yeah. So they're, that makes sense. Yeah. So they're ready to bring him in. I think, you know, WWF also wants to bring him
in. Let's see. So, okay. Bonnet, so.
Well, yeah, because he talked about this Renee's podcast last week where he was just like living in Chicago as Danny Bonaducci's bodyguard, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like helping him go collect money for his clubs and stuff. And then that turned into meeting Hogan. And then that turned into meeting Bischoff.
Because he went to a show at the Rosemont Horizon, actually.
Yes.
And Hogan liked how White worked the crowd and recommended him to WCW's VP, Eric Bischoff. He went to the Horizon show, was invited to the locker room, met Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, and Paul Orndorff, later met Bischoff, and then they came to a deal.
Yeah.
He had thought about... he earlier attempted to inquire about joining the WWF also at the Horizon during an autograph session. But he was turned away after he admitted that he had no experience.
Well, then that'll do it. I mean, you know, but WCW puts him kind of right into the fire. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's working with Hogan by the end of 1995. So, yeah. Another Observer note. I'm assuming the strap match is non-title, so Flair can interfere and Vader can touch all four corners. Talking about the main event of Uncensored, which we'll get to. That makes sense, but Hogan doing the job makes sense for business on several occasions, but not for Hogan business, which is the top priority. And what is actually huge news throughout the wrestling industry, Toys R Us has decided against carrying any WWF or WCW merchandise, which is kind of hilarious in 1995, considering what's to come in the next couple of years, where it's going to be their top selling stuff.
Yeah. That makes sense, though, because I'm trying to think, like, they had that lull in sort of like action figures. I guess they had the Bendems, which were like, those were terrible. But yeah, I mean, they finished up those Hasbros. So, yeah.
Well, yeah. And their big thing, you know, 1995, at least the WWF, is the Karate Fighter stuff. So,
oh, yeah. Oh, they're, man,
big in that.
I bought those because of that. I saw them every week. I had to get, I definitely had. I think I had four of them. I think there were like four or five different characters. I'm pretty sure I had all four.
Yeah. In direct response to WCW's adding of two pay-per-view shows this year, WWF has taken the bait and added four more pay-per-views, bringing the total to nine for 1995. So, and it is funny because Dave's like, oh, 10 or 11, that's a lot. And then, you know, you look at it now where they have 15 or whatever per year.
Yeah. Yeah, you get your 12 pay-per-views and your three or four super shows and not even counting NXT stuff with them.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
The Hogan Ultimate Surprise on the pay-per-view was originally set to be the Road Warriors, but Hawk was booked in Japan. So Last Davis Heard, it'll be, well, we'll get into that in the main event because it's very disappointing.
It's crazy. I don't know. I need to look over some of these observers for more information on the surprise.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, I don't get it. It's crazy.
Scott Steiner is in the television promo for Uncensored because they were going to have Steiners against Harlem Heat, but they decided it wouldn't serve a purpose to have the Steiners come in and win a non-title match when they didn't think they could get them to do the job in the title match. So that turned to Harlem Heat against the Nasty Boys, which we will get into in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was an 83 weeks about this show. Eric Bischoff's a big fan of Uncensored 1995. Said they're just trying to be different from what they had been doing, which, I mean, you could see that. Yeah. Also called it the beginning of the revolution that became how wrestling is presented today, which sounded kind of crazy, but I also get it kind of as we're going along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because the ECW stuff, when they started to become like Extreme Championship Wrestling, only started a couple months prior, if I recall correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Eric is also like, oh, you know, this is where the big guys start to become obsolete and they kind of shift gears to smaller guys, which WCW doesn't really, but I mean, you know. And they never discussed bringing in Warrior because neither side was interested and Warrior had a bad reputation, which, I mean, they'll work it out in a couple years and it'll go very poorly.
Very, yeah. Very poorly.
Yeah, so I mean, that's all the notes. We can just get right into Uncensored 1995 here from Tupelo.
From Tupelo. So we've got Shivani, Tanay, and Heenan as our hosts. Rob notes that within the first minute, he saw someone in a large foam Randy Savage hat.
Yes, which I recently acquired.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah, that one, yeah.
Yes.
Just need that Smoking Guns one.
Exactly.
Save that eBay search.
Mike today is manning the hotline tonight. He's not gonna be on commentary, but Gene Okerlund I believe had a kidney transplant and was not actually doing all that well, so mm-hmm. Good for him to recover from that. But yeah, we're opening with Dustin Rhodes against the Blacktop Bully in a King of the Road match. And I was not expecting this.
I was not either.
Oh, I knew it was coming. It was I haven't seen the show though in forever, but yeah, when I saw that was listed, I was like, oh, this will be interesting to watch.
So it's basically a cinematic match. What, probably the first one? I mean, because when was Piper and Goldust? It's later.
It has to be later.
No, it's a year later.
No, yeah. So, I mean, this is pretty much the first one of these that they did. I mean, you know, at least on a big scale like this. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I thought it was cool. You know, they're fighting on the back of a truck, and the point is to like honk the horn. We got a helicopter following it, and they got a truck on the side of it following. I mean, they're doing the best they can with the camera work. You know, it's not great, yeah. But
honestly, I think if they could bring this match back today, and it would probably be a lot better because of just the way that you can use cameras and the size of cameras that you can just put into the actual back bed. I actually think they probably, AEW could probably bring this back.
Yeah.
And this would probably work out really well for him too.
Well, and that's another thing that Bischoff brought up. He's like, you know, we wanted to feel like it was really happening and not just part like of a movie. So we had to film it kind of the way we did, which obviously they could have just pre-taped the whole thing, which they did pre-tape it, but they could have pre-taped it, you know, edited it, had to be basically the cinematic matches we see now. But I kind of liked how it was, how they did it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the only thing I thought they probably could have cut to a match and maybe just gone back to it or something, but yeah. That was the other thing I didn't know, because I didn't see any like big like video, you know, video screens for people to watch this. So did they show it to the crowd?
Yeah, I don't really know what they were doing in the arena. That's a good point, because
honestly I didn't see any for that, and then later on in another big match, I didn't think they showed it to the crowd either. So
yeah,
that was the only thing to production at this point. I really thought and I guess it's very clear to me really now watching back, like WCW and WWF production at this time, like WWF production is just so much better. That's crazy to think now watching Raw and the camera shakes and everything, but yeah, like I don't know how they even saw this in the crowd.
Yeah, well, and that was kind of the one thing I didn't like about it, where We got about 8 minutes in, and I'm like, you know, how much longer is this going to go?
Yeah.
Because there's only so much you can do when you're on, like, a truck with a platform that's, like, 10 feet wide and 30 feet long, and they pretty much did everything by then.
Yeah, they did everything they could once, like, twice, and then finally got it to go.
Yeah. And then they both got to kind of the point where the horn was, and Dustin got his eyes raked and fell, and then Blacktop Bully hit the horn for the win. Blacktop Bully is Barry Darso, by the way.
Yes.
From Demolition.
Yes.
Smash Repo Man.
Yes. yeah, Eric Bischoff liked this match. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, like I said, I thought it was a little long, but I enjoyed it. It was something different.
Yeah.
Then back to the Observer. WCW on Thursday fired Dustin Rhodes and Barry Darso and the Road Agent because they bled in this match and they were not supposed to bleed.
And in addition, the future of Dusty Rhodes is also questionable at press time. He was scheduled to do co-hosting duties, but was replaced at the last minute by Bobby Heenan, who had to do a four-hour live broadcast and wound up burning out on commentary, repeating much of his material. He was so upset with the situation, believing that it was a setup, although the situation wasn't resolved at press time. Inducting Dusty Rhodes into the Hall of Fame was considered a prime selling point of the Slamboree show, particularly live in St. Pete, where he's the big, where Rhodes was the biggest drawing card in the history of, you know, wrestling down there. Ric Flair had talked about doing yet another angle to bring Rhodes back for another run. Although despite doing excellent interviews last year, his return was met by poor crowds, even in cities where that were in his original stomping grounds.
Yeah.
So yeah, it kind of divulges into a total mess.
Also, that match was apparently edited down to 13 minutes from 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Which I'm now seeing, which that would have been something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, you don't want people to bleed, but ultimately it doesn't seem like something worth firing these guys over, and Dustin Rhodes will land on his feet, and I guess Barry Darso will too. I mean,
that's the thing to me, like, why would you bleed in a match that is going to get edited anyways? Like, they're just going to edit as much as they can away from you bleeding. Like, you just bled for nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you want to be like, oh, you know, this is uncensored, you know, there's no rules, but you're also the only people on the show bleeding.
Then... Yeah, and you're not even doing it for the crowd, I don't think. Like, they're going to edit it. It's not going to go to the crowd. So you did that for nothing. And I mean, yeah, it might be a big stretch to fire them, but if you have an edict from, I'm sure this is more of like a TNT, like a Turner, you know, type of deal, like trying to keep it sort of clean. Like, if that's coming from the top, you just gotta listen. I totally get why they got fired.
Yeah. But they also saved a bunch of money by getting rid of Dusty and Dustin, so.
Oh, for sure. And Dustin lands on his feet and lands in probably the best probably the best run of his career.
Yeah, no, I would say that first Gold Dust run, yeah. For sure. So it worked out. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Mike Tenay is talking to Arn Anderson about the boxer against wrestler match tonight against Johnny B. Bad. Arn says that Johnny's been thinking with his heart instead of his head, and Arn is the greatest wrestler in the world today, which Johnny's going to see in a few minutes when he gets taken down. Then we get Colonel Robert Parker gloating about Blacktop Bully beating Dustin. Starts hyping up the Mang versus Hacksaw Jim Duggan martial arts match. I mean, we don't need that.
No, we don't.
Like, if you're going to do a martial arts match, I guess put Mang in it, whatever, sure. But why is Jim Duggan the guy he's going against?
I don't know.
This is as good as mine.
We get Sonny Ono as the special referee for this in his WCW debut.
That was amazing to see.
He'll end up playing a big part in the company over the next 10 years, pretty much, by the time his lawsuit finally wraps up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, again, I don't know. It wasn't good.
It was not.
You know, Jim Duggan wouldn't bow to Mang or the referee, so just breaking customs.
Yeah, how heel-like of Duggan, you know? Like, jeez. Accept other people's cultures.
Yeah. Meng got the win after about 7 minutes. Dave says they tried to set it up like it was a karate match, except I've never heard of pinfalls in karate. I mean,
it's a rare gem from our pal Dave.
Have you guys ever watched Bloodsport, like the movie?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Duggan reminded me so much of the, I think his name's like Ray Jackson or something, like the big dude who Braun could probably pass as nowadays.
Yeah.
But like just the whole getup, I was like, is he just like doing cosplay from Bloodsport, looking like that?
Oh man.
But yeah, how do you follow up the bunkhouse match? You go right into a karate match.
We get an Arn Anderson video where he says he's going to do whatever it takes to hold on to the TV title, even though it's not on the line tonight. But, you know. Then it's time for the boxer versus wrestler match between Arn Anderson and Johnny B. Badd. You get 10 three-minute rounds. You can win by pinfall, submission, 10 count, or knockout. And basically, Arn gets his ass kicked for most of it. And then after the bell in round two, he hits a DDT to kind of even things up and just keeps going during the rest period because there's no rules, so no one's going to stop him. And then Johnny B. Badd knocks him out in the fourth round. This was also not very good.
It was not.
For as much as I hated it, though, the crowd definitely popped. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it looked like a lot of fun. The crowd kind of saved this whole show.
Oh, yeah.
They were real into it. Moving along, we get Randy Savage against Avalanche. And, you know, I'm a big fan of both guys. Don't need to see them working for 12 minutes in 1995.
Absolutely not. Just completely unnecessary.
They're just kind of going back and forth. And then a lady comes out of the audience and starts beating up Savage. But as it turns out, it's Ric Flair.
It is.
That leads to a disqualification, despite this event having no rules, and Tony Schiavone saying this is uncensored, so the match will continue about 45 seconds before the bell. Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely didn't know what they were doing, like, agent-wise. Like, oh, yeah, we'll just throw out a DQ ending and a no-DQ pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Also, yeah. It's crazy to me that Tenta, that Avalanche, is 32 at the show.
Yeah, I didn't really realize that when he died, he was like 45.
Yeah.
He was really young. Like,
yeah.
That's just kind of what they used to do with those big guys they brought in for Hogan, though. They'd be like 27 or 28 just working on top. Because like Bundy, I think at WrestleMania was like 29.
Yeah.
So they just bring him in, you know, get him. And then, you know, we talked about Big Show. They did that with him, too.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but yeah, it's crazy. I mean, he was probably what, like 28, 27 when he went against Hogan at SummerSlam, and then he's 32 here, and then he's by the time he gets back to WWF he's probably only like 34, 35.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's crazy.
And he always looked like he was like 45, so
yes,
him and Arn.
Up next we get Sting against Big Bubba Rogers, who's wrestling in his Constable Corbin business casual gear. I don't know. I mean, it's an event with no rules, which they continue to reiterate, but then you get like the heels just doing limb work. You should probably have them do some more heel stuff in these matches.
Oh yeah. Like, yeah,
I don't know, man. Why are you just working the limbs? And it was a good match. I mean, Sting, you know, messed up his knee early in the match. So they kind of worked with that. That's why they did the limb work, but still, like,
yeah.
Bubba goes for a splash in the corner. Sting moves and tries to body slam him, and Bubba falls on him for the pinfall. So basically the beginning of the Hogan-Andre match, except it was a finish. You know.
Yep.
Sure.
Then we get the Nasty Boys versus Harlem Heat in a Falls Count Anywhere Tornado Tag Team match. No titles on the line tonight, by the way.
Yeah, no. Which, I get it, it's not sanctioned by WCW. You can't put your titles on the line, but you got to enforce that consistently.
Oh, yeah. It's very strange.
So it's Falls Count Anywhere match. They end up at concessions, and Brian Knobbs throws some popcorn at Booker and then just falls right on his ass.
Just totally eats shit.
Oh, man.
I really don't know how he didn't get hurt doing that, because he just, right on his hip.
I don't know how anybody didn't get hurt during most of these, especially Sherry.
Well, yeah,
Sherry
they wanted got, to, They have one at the end where they just like shove Sherry and she's on the ground.
Sags just shoves her from behind. She just goes down. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah, I that was worth it for the pay-per-view alone.
It's also like very clearly just a concession area they set up to do this. So they could have just not put a bunch of ice on the floor.
Yeah. I don't know. Was it ice or was it just the ketchup and mustard that they threw at each other?
That's a good question, because the Nasty Boys get the win and you don't see it on camera.
Yeah, terrible production. And this was the other match that I'm like, I don't know if the crowd even could see this. Like, they didn't show anything on a screen, or like, I didn't see any screens that could have been working for it. So
yeah, it was great though. I enjoyed it.
Both Falls Count Anywhere matches on these shows were absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
And I'll have more about the triple threat and my thoughts on that too later on.
Vader cuts a promo on Hogan where he just kind of shouts a lot.
That's Vader for you.
You know.
Yeah, but Vader had a great line. Says it's time for you to pay for your stupidity to Hogan. So I'll take that one.
If only.
So yeah, Vader with Ric Flair against Hulk Hogan with the Renegade leather strap match. And Michael Buffer is here to ring announce. Says the match is sanctioned by WCW, which it is not. The entire point of this pay-per-view is it's not. Yeah, I realize Michael Buffer is not very good at this. He's just there to get money.
He's fine.
And that's fine.
He's fine.
You know,
I don't even know if he's fine. Like, what's that one? Where's that one? That audio with him and on Bret Hart when he says messed up something huge on Bret Hart, and Bret Hart's even like, I forget what Bret says, but he's just totally pissed off at him.
You know, it's good work if you can get it, man.
Yeah, I mean, your job is to say like, you know, 10 things. Like, you got cards to read off of if you want. So.
Man has gotten rich off of 5 words.
That's true. Like,
I can't argue with that.
Great work if you can get it.
I think like at its peak though, they were paying him something crazy per appearance.
They were, yeah, of course.
Like,
yeah.
Every time he was on the screen, he was getting like $25,000 from them.
Yeah.
Or something like that. But
yeah, Turner Sports backed up the Brinks truck for him.
Yeah. Which, I mean, did it give it a big fight feel?
Yes.
I guess so. I mean,
it definitely did.
Okay, so Renegade comes out, and I thought it was Ultimate Warrior for a second because he has Ultimate Warrior music and looks like Ultimate Warrior.
Exactly. Okay, like how does there has to be some litigation either from WWE suing them for copyright or Warrior himself suing, because there is no way that got out there without a lawsuit coming afterwards.
I forgot it was either the Monday Night War DVD or it was the Ultimate Warrior DVD where they kind of talked about it and how it was pretty much a knockoff, but I don't remember like the full like fledged thing.
I mean, it wasn't even trying not to be like, I mean, that music alone, like, yeah, it's a little different, but it's the same general beat, just with an overlay of, you know, a little bit more guitar going over.
Yeah.
But and the ultimate surprise, like, okay, we get it.
And Renegade is kind of a sad story because he just kind of was expected to be Ultimate Warrior this whole time and just never really clicked. And then by 1998, he's out of WCW, and by 1999, he kills himself. So it's a real bummer.
I mean,
you know. So we get this match started. Jimmy Hart's been missing all night, so that's not great. And then he just kind of shows up. They really played up that he wasn't around, so I thought there'd be a bigger payoff than just him coming out.
Yeah.
But Hogan hits Vader with some very bad chair shots. Not even very bad, like they look like they hurt. They barely hit him.
He's always been awful at chair swinging.
Yeah. Maybe he was worried about hitting Vader, and like if he, you know, if you hit him too much, maybe Vader pops he one.
Well, I was thinking about that while I was watching the match. Like, for as much as people want to say about Hogan, he's never really had a reputation of a worker that is stiff or whatever. I mean,
no,
he took care of everyone.
Yeah.
You know, Hogan's about to touch all four corners, but a masked man distracts him and Flair hits him in the back with a chair, which they switch from the like move or the steel chairs to like director's chairs, which I thought was weird.
Mm-hmm.
Invader's about to touch all four, but Flair stops him and says, you know, hit another splash on Hogan. They put Hogan's head on the chair. Then Hogan moves, Invader goes down. Flair hits Hogan with a chair. Hogan hulks up. Hogan puts the strap on Flair and touches all four corners, and the bell rings, even though Flair wasn't technically the one in the match. But there's no rules.
No rules. And at least this is a proper strap match.
Yeah. The masked man comes back out, and everyone thinks it's Arn Anderson, but Arn Anderson comes out, and he's bound and gagged. So the masked man ends up being Randy Savage, looking like Chuck Mangione from King of the Hill. The faces dispatch the heels, and they pose to end the night. So, I don't know. I mean, it's not a good show, but it's entertaining and different enough, and only like 2 hours and 15 minutes, where it's definitely worth watching.
Yeah. I just think it's weird, like, just the whole layout. Because they still have, what, you have two actual, like, matches that are just straight-up matches.
Mm-hmm.
And you put them pretty close together. I don't even remember if they were right after each other. Yeah, they were.
Yeah, they were back-to-back.
They're back-to-back. And so you start the night off with those first three, you know, weird matches. And then you go to those two. And then you follow it up with the tag title, or the tag match. The tornado one and then the strap match. I just think that from a production point, I think it's just so weird.
Yeah. No, you could have switched it up a little bit.
I didn't like the match, the strap match, but I liked the ending, the switch, you know, with the Savage instead of Arn and doing that. I thought that was nice. It was a good finish for it.
Yeah. Got 85% thumbs down in the Observer. I mean, you know, latest word on WCW television pay-per-view policy, no more foreign objects can be shown used on television from this point forward, except the movie stunt chairs. So that's why they did those. Mm-hmm. And Hogan was allowed to hit Vader with a chair, but no one's allowed to hit Hogan with a chair. yeah. So
as weird as that is though, that's WWF's policy. I think at SummerSlam.
Well, because I think one of the pay-per-view cable providers was like, you know, no more foreign objects for a while.
Yeah, because I think SummerSlam 94, I think it was the second ladder match between Shawn and Razor. Mm-hmm. Like, they even talk about it, I think, on Bruce's podcast, where he's like, they couldn't use the ladder as a weapon because they didn't want to have any household objects being used as weapons anymore. And it's like, how are you going to have a ladder match where it's not a weapon?
Well, and it's just really weird considering where they're going to be in a couple of years.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah.
But, you know. Yeah, we can move on to 1998 now, unless you guys have anything else.
Mm-mm. Nope.
From the Observer on February 23rd, to say that behind the scenes at WCW is tumultuous would be an everyday thing, but the situation's become far more extreme than usual. It's impossible to have 100 wrestlers under contract, keep them all happy under any circumstances. It's even harder here because the most talented wrestlers are used in the middle, and the top slots are locked up by people who have name, power connections, and there's little upward mobility. So things aren't going well.
They are not.
You know.
Also sounds sort of similar to 2021.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Although there's basically little, no chance of Flair leaving. The best of our knowledge, he has not signed his contract, but he's working under a new 3-year agreement. He's brought up to Bischoff and at least one other person in management to retire and work for the company in PR fashion, going to ticket sale openings and doing, you know, TV and radio and stuff, which probably would have been better considering Ric Flair's last few years with WCW. But, you know, they just stick with him and doesn't go great. And Hogan also hasn't signed his extension, and I know they were thinking he might go back to WWF in 1998, which would have been interesting, I guess.
Very.
He's not really moving the meter too much in 1998 anymore, though.
Nope.
Like, you know, but yeah, I thought that was interesting. Eddie Guerrero actually went to Bischoff trying to get a release from his contract, but was turned down and snapped at, even though Bischoff later did apologize. With the exception of Rey Mysterio, virtually all the wrestlers are under contract for nearly 2 more years, and it's doubtful Bischoff would release them since most would wind up with Titan. And they do in 2 years. So
they do. Correct.
I don't know if Eddie would have, like, fit, though, in 98.
Oh no, he definitely
WWF. Would.
Yeah, no, I have no idea where you put him in 1998.
Yeah,
he'd be doing light heavyweight title stuff, and it would suck.
Yeah. There's a near riot in Lincoln, Nebraska, at the house show. The crowd in the college town had been rowdy. Jericho started running down the Nebraska Cornhuskers football team with the same stuff they do for cheap heat every night, but the heat was expensive this time. The crowd started throwing things. Ringside fans were getting nailed with bottles, and security had to call in 30 backup police officers to calm things down. Then when Kurt Hennig came out for his main event against Ric Flair, he became human target practice until Flair said he was going to give him a Tom Osborne ass-whooping. After the show, fans continued to throw things and people hit the ring. The building was said to have looked like a war zone by the end of the night, and WCW security said it was the worst fan behavior ever at a WCW event. Well, let me tell you, which company had people constantly throwing shit at the ring in 1998?
WCW.
So,
exactly.
At some point, you get what you get. See.
You reap what you sow.
What company had plants pretty much all the time rushing the ring?
WCW.
Well, or WCW. Yeah, that too. I forgot about that. Yeah.
I mean.
Oh, yeah. Because I remember the one who jumped the cage or whatever when Hogan and Piper were fighting and Savage like punched him.
I guess maybe it wasn't, you know, necessarily plans, but they almost had it happening every week. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they enabled it and they, you know, they let it go by.
Yeah. When they worked for it. I mean, they worked to it. They wanted it.
Yeah, they exactly. wanted it. Absolutely.
Yeah. From March 16th, behind-the-scenes turmoil has exploded over the past week between the Hulk Hogan, Eric Bischoff power base, and the Kevin Nash, Scott Hall group that has clearly lost power. And basically, Sean Waltman was a casualty of that because Bischoff released him because he was friends with Hall and Nash, pretty much.
Couldn't cut the mustard.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, things aren't going great for WCW.
They are not.
Let's see what else we got here. Benoit, Chris Jericho, and Dean Malenko all bumped into Vince McMahon, Shawn Michaels, and Stone Cold at the hotel near the Pittsburgh airport, and they were all kind of pitched on what WWF could do for them, but obviously they don't jump quite yet.
Bumped into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
I'm sure.
Wait, who'd you say it was? It was Benoit, Jericho, and...
Malenko.
Malenko.
Malenko, okay.
And the Steiners and Kurt Hennig.
Oh, okay.
So...
Hennig being there is interesting. He just got there, like... less than a year ago.
He could have maybe actually bumped into them though. Maybe he wasn't, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna say purpose. I don't think Henning was looking to go back.
No,
Henning left on pretty bad terms, looks
yeah,
like.
he just, you know, I was gonna say he just got there, so
I don't think the Steiners are probably looking to jump either.
But, probably not.
No,
you know.
Now Scott's just in like his first sort of singles run here. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. While no official announcement has been made by either side, the belief is, for a number of reasons, that the New Japan WCW deal may end up being completely dead.
I mean, they really didn't. I mean, besides the occasional talent exchange or whatever, they don't really do anything with it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you got your occasional Masahiro Chono appearance on Nitro. You got your one or two, like, great Muda things during that when he was in the NWO 2.
Yeah.
But, you know, by 97 and 98, that thing might as well be dead.
Well, and then the guys that WCW are sending to New Japan aren't top guys either.
No, exactly.
No. They're just sending, they're probably just sending, Norton and NWO Sting?
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah.
Exactly.
Jumping Jack Farmer.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the situation regarding Sean Waltman, if anything, has gotten hotter over the last week with no explanation to his firing, except that Eric Bischoff was trying to send a message to Nash and Hall. Also, he has a broken neck at the moment, so... not a time you should fire someone.
No.
But, you know. Yeah. That's pretty much everything going on with them at the moment. Mm-hmm. I know WWF had WrestleMania 14 going. Didn't include any of that. But, you know, a lot of stuff going on there.
That, so.
Yes. It is interesting that Dave thinks that Shawn Michaels was faking to get out of losing his title again. But
well, I mean, to be fair, he had earned that reputation. Well,
yes, but this time he's actually hurt.
Yes.
WCW NWO Uncensored 1998 from Mobile, Alabama. Hosted by Tony Schiavone, Mike Tenay, and Bobby Heenan, who are very excited about the Hulk Hogan Randy Savage main event.
Yes, aren't we all? God. To start things off, though, for the television title, we get Eddie Guerrero taking on Booker T. And Eddie had beaten Chavo on Thunder, so Chavo has to be in Eddie's corner. Had Chavo won, Eddie would have to stop lying, cheating, and stealing and go back to honoring the Guerrero way.
Yeah. It is funny.
I'm not sure he would have been able to keep that promise regardless.
It is funny that when, you know, they pair him up in WWE, they just forget about that whole thing and just have Chavo embrace it.
Yeah.
But
well, you know,
that's also the most entertaining Chavo was in his career.
But so. I mean, also to be entirely fair, there's something to be said about conditioning.
Well, yeah, that's true. This is the first singles match for Eddie and Booker, so that's fun.
Yeah,
you know, we'll see them.
Fun
work
to see that. Yeah, we'll see
over them. The years.
Yeah, we just saw them work a couple weeks ago on SmackDown in 05. So,
you know, Booker's beating up Eddie on the outside, and Chavo doesn't do anything to help. He just doesn't want to be out there. Booker gets the win with a missile dropkick, so he retains the TV title.
That's such a good end. That's such a good finish, though, because Eddie lands the backflip just to walk straight into a missile dropkick.
Yeah. No, yeah, it was good.
It's legitimately great.
After the match, Eddie beats up Chavo for not helping him in the match. So
We get Conan versus Juventud Guerrero. Guerrero unmasked recently, but he's not letting it get him down. This was a plodding ass matchup.
Yeah, I probably would have picked up the pace a little bit.
It's Conan.
Conan. Yeah, that's the issue. Conan cannot go.
No, past. He can't.
Yeah, like I feel like once he hit that NWO style, Conan's offense just was so bad because he's actually a really decent worker, and especially in like 95 and 96.
Yeah. No, that's fair. He wasn't bad. Mm-hmm. I mean. But yeah, so they kind of, Conan's just kind of messing with him for most of the match and then isn't taking him seriously and then loses with a surprise roll up. So
yeah,
I really like, there's a spot in the match where, Conan sort of like looking to do almost like a backdrop off the top and Hoovy lands on his feet and Conan's in that like tree of woe style, sort of like how Drew does his like throw from the top. And to me that seemed like a spot that Drew they could really use in a Drew match where his opponent actually like lands on his feet and then delivers a drop kick because he's so like he's still down. But yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
It was good. I loved Hoovy though. Hoovy was one of my, I think he was probably my favorite cruiserweight in WCW.
Yeah. I'm really not looking forward to later this year when they get to WWE on the other podcast because they just do not use them correctly. Obviously, yeah. I mean, you can tell they don't, but, you know. Mean Gene's talking to J.J. Dillon, even though Uncensored is not sanctioned by WCW. J.J. Dillon was approached by The Giant earlier today and said he wanted the powerbomb unbanned for tonight's match against Kevin Nash. Nash's side agreed, and they were surprised that The Giant went for it. So just for tonight, the powerbomb is legal. Get Dean Malenko against Chris Jericho for the Cruiserweight title. I mean, I don't know. It's not for me.
Yeah. No, this is a bad match. And they actually have decent matches.
Oh, they
do. This is a really bad match.
Yeah, I don't really, because I mean, there are two guys who obviously know how to work, but they just
didn't click.
No.
Sometimes that happens.
Yeah. I mean, we saw it with Kevin Owens and AJ Styles.
Exactly.
Yeah. So and Jericho makes Malenko tap, and then Mean Gene gets in the ring and really kind of makes fun of Malenko for losing.
He just lays into him.
He's like doing Stephen A. on Kwame Brown if Stephen A. did it in front of Kwame Brown. Like, that's how bad he was. Yeah, you're 0-4 at WCW big events. I was like, damn, okay.
Scott Steiner against Lex Luger is up next. Steiner goes to get a chair couple minutes into the match and hit Luger with it, but Rick Steiner comes out and distracts Scott, and Luger's able to capitalize and pin Scott, and Scott turns the chair on Rick, but Rick dumps him over the ropes to the floor. So we get a feud there.
Yeah, they did what they had to do here.
Yeah.
And then we get a false count anywhere match for the WCW United States Championship between Chris Benoit, DDP, and Raven. And this was probably the best match that I watched on these two shows.
Yeah.
Just in my opinion. It was a chaotic mess in the best possible way, I think.
Yeah.
And these dudes at this point in time, you know, they're Raven and DDP especially are just on top of their game. And DDP he's coming off the Savage feud, so he's still red hot. Mm-hmm. Even after, you know, quote unquote losing the feud, he still gained a lot, obviously, by working with Savage. Raven, he's doing his thing right now, and it's his stuff. He hasn't missed in like months at this point, ever since he showed up.
Well, and
Raven is not discussed enough, if you're trying to catch my drift here.
Just in
he's
general.
Great. Well, he's great.
You know what the thing is with Raven is, he had such little success in WWE that people, I think, forget about him.
I think, yeah, but they should educate themselves on his work in WCW and ECW too. I mean, he's phenomenal in this.
Yeah. No, he's very good. And I like, too, that, you know, they use weapons that look like they hurt and make a lot of noise, like a trash can or a stop sign, but don't really hurt all that much.
Right, exactly.
So it really gets you to believe it. Raven also got dropped toe holded onto a chair.
Yeah.
That hurt.
That was a standard move for that was Benoit who did it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a standard for him.
Raven puts Paige on the table, Benoit hits Raven with a stop sign. Then Paige gets off the table and pushes Benoit off the ropes and hits a diamond cutter from the top rope, kind of through the table.
Yeah.
On Raven for the win.
Yeah, that spot popped the hell out of me when I saw it, even with the table not breaking.
The table bump was sort of like Tegan Knox going at that takeover when Raquel threw her.
Yes.
Just sort of the table didn't want to break at that point.
Yeah, like
wants to fall over.
One side of the legs collapsed and that's about it.
Yeah. But DDP, like, yeah, you talk about on a hot streak, like 4 months from now, he's going to be teaming with, you know, the piece of shit Carl Malone, but then he's got Leno the next month too. I mean,
yep,
in like four or five months he's on top of the world.
Yeah, and then at Halloween Havoc, him and Goldberg, you know, everyone talks about Havoc 98 for the stupid Hogan Warrior match, but my god, that DDP Goldberg match is incredible.
Yeah.
I talk about that show because of the fact that they couldn't air that match because Hogan Warrior went so long. How terrible.
Yeah.
But actually, yeah, no, DDP is so red hot at this point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, you talk about Raven. He also had one of Goldberg's best WCW matches. Yes,
Raven's Rules, April 20th. Ironically enough, it was in Colorado.
Yeah.
Because it was the night after Spring Stampede.
Mm-hmm.
That match is just so good.
Yeah.
Well, it's another thing, like, too, like, with Raven, especially because he has his flock, like, he doesn't have to be wrestling every week. Like, he's sending out his goons, but he's being shown, and he's being like, you know, the way he's positioned himself as, I will do things on my own way. It just gives him an elevation of, you know, it makes him cooler for the audience, and it just gives him a, you know, it makes you think that he's a big deal.
Yeah.
And it's just something they don't do a lot now because everybody's got to wrestle every week, it seems.
Exactly. Kevin Nash against the Giant. Kevin Nash apparently powerbombed the Giant and hurt his neck, and that's why the powerbomb got banned, from what I gathered.
Yeah, they did like a whole broken, I don't know if it was, I don't think it was legit, but like they did like a whole broken neck type deal.
So Giant's wrestling in a neck brace, and Nash works the neck and then pulls off the neck brace, but then Giant gets the upper hand and he's going to powerbomb Nash, but Brian Adams comes out and hits him in the back with a baseball bat. The rest of the NWO comes out to fight him, but the Giant fights him off. So, you know. Sure.
Yep. Go to Curt Hennig versus Bret Hart, which, you know, at first glance, you think, okay, this is probably going to be pretty solid. Hart comes out with a Calgary Hitmen jersey on. They're in the playoffs.
Yeah, they are. Good for them. It's not going to be as good as their Intercontinental title match.
Nope.
From SummerSlam.
Nope.
A lot of mileage put on those tires by then.
We got Rick Rude at ringside. He's been a problem. Kind of double teaming Brett when he gets a chance. Mm-hmm. So multiple matches on this show have low blows because it's uncensored and there's no rules. But also the last match ended in disqualification. So yeah. Again, they're not good at enforcing the whole
there's not.
No rules.
They're not. They're just not.
Brett kicked out of a perfect plex. Hennig did a sunset flip for a pin, but Brett rolled through, got the sharpshooter on, and Hennig taps before Rick Rude can come break it up. It was good. I mean,
it was.
It wasn't. No. I am like, these two are like two of my favorites, and I will watch the SummerSlam match and the King of the Ring match every single day if I could. But this was disappointing for me to watch. It was just so slow and plodding, and Hennig definitely has lost a step, but Hart isn't into this at all either. Yeah. And it's just like they do the callbacks too to some of the SummerSlam spots, and nobody cares in the audience either. And I did find it interesting though that commentary did bring up the SummerSlam match, because mm-hmm. they did put up that like Henning was the first person that Hart beat as a singles competitor to like set him on his path and everything.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, overall, I mean, I guess it's to be seen, you know, because it is five years after the King of the Ring match. I mean, these guys have probably lost a couple of steps, but it was disappointing from a big fan of these two, for me at least.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then it's time for the WCW World Heavyweight title match, which features Scott Hall.
Yeah. Which
probably one of Scott Hall's only like major singles title matches.
Yeah, he's got the Rumble. He's got the Rumble match with Hart in 93. But yeah, he probably doesn't have many other ones.
Yeah, so he's facing. He had the Bret Hart match, he had this match, and then
probably had some TNA, I'm sure, but I'm not really counting any of those.
Yeah, one of the TNA weekly pay-per-views he lost to Ron Killings.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I mean, Scott Hall comes out and just selling everything like Shawn Michaels against Hulk Hogan. I don't know. It's not very good. No. Dusty comes in when the referee is dealing with Scott Hall and hits an elbow drop on Sting, but Sting kicks out after two. Then we get another ref bump and Scott Hall hits Sting with brass knuckles and Sting kicks out again. And Sting counters the Razor's Edge into the Scorpion Death Drop and retains the title.
Yeah.
It's kind of there. I mean,
it's kind of there. Yeah.
Then it's time for our main event.
One thing though in the Sting and Scott Hall, like the aftermatch of it, why the hell is Dusty Rhodes in the ring trying to make it all about himself, like staring down Sting? Like seriously, like you're not gonna wrestle. Like you're not a big deal anymore. Like get out. Stay out.
Yeah, I mean, you know. He's a showman, man.
I guess, but that's just like, come on, dude. What are you doing? Like, just stay on the outside, take a hint. And then Sting, of course, does like the DX, you know, crotch chop pretty much.
That was weird.
Just like, yeah, I'm just like, maybe not the best idea here, you know, that you're doing.
yeah, it's time for Hulk Hogan against Randy Savage in Steel Cage rematch from WrestleMania 5.
We're currently watching.
Currently in the midst of watching. Also not a good show.
It's taking like all day because it's a freaking slog.
Yeah, it's not good. I got Michael Buffer here again for some ring announcing. He didn't screw anything up this time, so that was good. Hogan starts whipping Savage with the weight belt quite a bit. They both exit the cage through the door, but keep fighting outside. That's not how a cage match works.
Nope. Yeah.
Once you're outside, it's over.
Well, I guess I don't know, maybe WCW probably didn't have that, because that is like a New York, like New York is the New York territory was the first to like do that, to like not have Bruno lose.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
maybe that's just something that they don't have.
Technically the cage is supposed to keep people out, so I get it, I guess. Like you shouldn't have a, I mean, it also doesn't keep people out, we're gonna see that in a couple minutes here.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
Savage hit a double axe handle off the top of the cage, but Hogan kicked out. Savage went to the top for an elbow drop, but the Disciple comes out, gets the key from the ref, and comes in the cage. Disciple is my good pal, Ed Leslie.
Oh, boy.
Who you may know as Brutus Beefcake.
I'm glad you're on first name basis. Yeah.
So Savage comes down from the top and faces off with Hogan and the Disciple. And it's 2-on-1, but Sting comes in very slowly from the ref.
This is so bad.
He got like stuck halfway through, and then
I got scared for him, and I obviously know he's safe. Like he goes up and then he like lands on the top beam of the cage, and I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah. So Sting finally gets in there, and then Savage turns around and hits Sting, hits him with a pile driver, and then goes out the door and yells at Hogan. The show ends. So I guess Hogan won.
I guess
I don't know who won.
Who who won and why are we beating up Sting after having, you know, him just win the title?
Well, we're beating up Sting because he's dumb and, you know, trusts everyone when he shouldn't. This is listed as a draw, which is definitely what you want in a cage match.
Definitely in a, and you want a draw in a match that is supposed to decide the leader of the NWO. It is a draw.
Got to stretch it out, man.
It's just crazy to me. Like, who do you, what do you think they, because, I mean, another thing too, Sting doesn't main event. He's now the champion. His first defense outside of beating Hogan. And you don't have a main event. So did you have the finish for Hogan's match in mind first? Or did you just put Hogan as the main event because it's Hogan and he might be contractually obligated to be the main event?
I would say probably that one.
Yeah.
I'd probably say that one.
It's crazy, though. They don't have another world title match on pay-per-view until, Jesus, I'm already in September and I don't have
I think it's July.
I mean, at this point, they're a TV company.
Yep, they're a TV company. They are all about TV.
Yeah, not about profit, that's for sure, though.
Yeah, do we have anything else about 1998?
No, I mean, the production again, too, like, even in the main event here, like, at least with WWF's cage at the time, with the big blue cage and everything, like, you could actually get a camera sort of to see inside of it.
Yeah.
And when you use, like, the hard cam for most of this match, like, you just can't see shit. You're just looking through a fence. It doesn't work. But WCW, I don't, like, just looking back, it's like, man, why did I watch this every week? Or, you know, it's like, how did this stuff make sense? And it doesn't. And that's part of the thing, too. Like, 2021, when things don't make sense. Yeah, shit didn't make sense 20 years ago either, but we still ate it up.
So, exactly.
Continue to eat.
Okay? All right. So, our next show is going to be pretty fun.
It will.
Talking about the 20-year anniversary of the final WCW Monday Nitro, WWF Monday Night Raw simulcast.
Yep.
Hard to believe it's been 20 years.
It really is.
But, yeah, really excited for that. That should be out hopefully close to, what was it, March 26th?
March 26th.
So hopefully close to then. Yeah, really looking forward to that. Gonna really dive in, do some research, get some different points of view there. And yeah, no, that's gonna be a lot of fun.
Indeed. And, you know, you'll be able to catch that on here. We'll, of course, be advertising when that goes down. And, you know, we're gonna do some research on what to do for the month of April. Certainly won't be doing Manias, but there's obviously some other shows that we could tap into. Lockdown for TNA always happened in April. We could talk about some spring stampedes.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you know, we'll get to it. And you know, that's been this Retro Review podcast here on the Barbershare Network. I'm Chris Novak. You can follow me at Chris M. Novak. Follow Rob at Robert O'Neill 31. Follow Chris Osborne at Hitman 99. Follow Barbershare at BarbershareNet. Subscribe to the Patreon. Check out all the podcasts on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Spotify. And, you know, that's just the way it goes. And we'll be back next time around, like we said, for the final episode of Monday Nitro.